righty, Jed. We are set and ready to rumble. To all of you, a fine greeting today, whether it's good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, or in some cases the next day. We're delighted that all of you are here. This is the MediaBits Power Hour. We've been hosting these calls over the last 15 years. Those of you who are joining us are publications, publishers, advertising sales professionals. Many of you have been on all of our calls and most of our calls. Some of you are brand new. It doesn't matter where you are in the cycle of the advertising sales profession. What we love is the fact that you are here and that you are here investing in yourself. A word of suggestion, please, again, no multitasking. Turn off the computers, the cell phones, the Blackberries, whatever. Just close your office door. Invest in yourself, okay? That's really what this is about over the next 60 minutes. The other key piece, we have more than 7 pages of inbound questions that have come in, and we'll continue to field your questions real-time over the course of our program, okay? So we'll tell you a little bit more about that as our program begins. But I'd like to begin by saying hello to Jed, who's there. Yes,
I am.
Very good. Jed is the owner and president of MediaBiz, and I'd love him to say some opening words. I'll say some opening words about Power Hour, and then we're going to launch right into our program, okay?
Great. Well, thanks again. Ernest is really the one who makes these teleseminars worth listening to. In the case of this particular teleseminar, a lot of the data is coming from me, so I'm talking more than I usually would, our other teleseminars are also available online if you'd like to listen to them. If you have, we're going to be talking about a lot of data and a lot of numbers, and so if you have questions, I just want to reiterate what Ernest is saying. Feel free to email us during the teleseminar or after. But again, I want to thank Ernest for making this possible and relevant.
Thank you so much, Jed. It's an absolute pleasure to all of you. I've been in publications and publishing since the mid-80s. I've done this for 2-plus decades. I was sharing early on. For those of you who know exactly what you're doing in publication and website sales and advertising sales, you know that this is the single best job in the world and the single best career. But if you don't have all the pieces together and if you don't have the formula, it can sometimes feel like the most difficult. So in my work with Power Hour, which is my company, I started this 15 years ago. I work with publications all over the world in 8 time zones. I'm a business coach, a business trainer. I'm an expert on LinkedIn, and I show my clients how to make money on LinkedIn with their particular audiences. We have a recruiting division, which means we help our clients find really great advertising sales leaders and professionals. We have an investment banking group. We did an entire call just recently about the buying and selling of publications, and I have a team of 10 who do nothing but search engine optimization, meaning we know exactly how to bring more people to your website, and we know exactly how to take your website and monetize it, which means you'll know how to make more money from your website, and we truly believe that there's a bundled approach to print your website combined with an e-newsletter, a 3-part approach, okay? All righty, very good. So throughout the course of this program, we have 7 pages of questions in advance that we'll be weaving into our call. If you have any specific questions during the course of it, we imagine there'll be a lot, please send an email to ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the confirmation that actually got you here today. There are 3 key points we're going to be covering. Our program today is focused on print advertising results, what works and what doesn't. You are going to hear information, statistics, a variety of data that will be very insightful for you, information you could not get anywhere else. And I mean it, and we mean it, okay? So, again, the request is let's get focused on what we're doing here, clear out all the clutter, no multitasking, and let's rock and roll. Okay, so, Jed, the first point, what type of advertising generates the best response in different geographic regions and in different types of publications? Could we kind of take that first sub-point of point one first?
Yeah, and let's before we start getting into the data, let's put this in some context.
Okay, let's go.
Because I think that, I think that the, the numbers that we're going to talk about here are very relevant, and they certainly, will be new to some people, but I also think that it's important to understand where they come from, because because although we can draw some broad generalizations from them, you know, you may disagree with some of my generalizations based on where they're coming from. You know, what Mediabids, just to take a quick step back, I mean, Mediabids is a site that buys and sells conventional ad space, so where people actually, you know, pay for space and the ad runs in the way that most of the publications on this call currently do business. About 3 years ago, we started a response-based program, right? We started running ads in publications where the publications were being paid based on the response that's generated. And so the results that we talk about today is by and large from that program. And obviously that's sort of a certain type of advertiser. Typically, the advertisers that we are generating this data from are advertisers who are, you know, direct response in nature, and national. But we have a pretty broad group of ads that we're making these assumptions from. In 2008, we had 14,000 ad insertions. In 2009, about 79,000 ad insertions. And in 2010 so far, 83,000. So what we do is we track the results of these ads, you know, based on either unique phone numbers or unique URLs. You know, in 2010 so far, the ads that we placed have generated just over 270,000 unique phone calls and about 1.1 million unique web visits. A lot of what we say here, though, is going to be based on, you know, direct response advertisers, which in some cases are quite a bit different than brand advertisers that you may run into in your course of doing business. That's sort of my disclaimer, Ernest.
Okay, but it's also the factual information where it's coming from. So let me again summarize. We have 83,000 ads that are out in play. Mm-hmm. We have 274,000 calls that are being tracked and 1.1 million website views. Did I get those three data points correct?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Yeah?
Yep,
okay.
Exactly.
All right, very good.
The you know, in general, we're sort of tracking results on about 60 advertisers. The reason I say 60, about 60, is that, you know, we have a few that have sort of come and gone, you know, new ones that have been added, but, you know, it's about 60 advertisers that we're tracking in this way.
And Jed, could you just rattle off just the names of just a couple of those?
Sure.
Give a little reference for the group.
Yep, I meant to do that. Dish Network, DirecTV, ProFlowers, Vonage, Miracle Ear, LifeLock, ADT, Omaha Steaks, Sears. You know, I can keep going. We have several what we would call debt clients, which are people who are either loan modification or, you know, credit card relief type accounts. And then we have some of the more kind of high end type direct response, like Endless Pools and Total Gym, different home security companies. There's AARP uses our program for their life insurance product. Red Envelope, Sea Kayak, Omaha Steaks, Net Zero. So you get the idea. Those are, you know, they're all sort of national direct response type companies.
That's perfect, Jed. And that just, I just want the group to just have an understanding that, you know, this is more than just fly-by fruiting. I mean, you really have a deep understanding of what's happening with these advertisers, with the placements, what's working and what's not, and then you can come back and track it. Now, let's just also get off just for a moment to the side and just say, listen, be very clear that the ability to track every single advertiser you have, every single web piece of activity, all of this is very much at your fingertips. So if you're still working in the days where you just placed ads and then you sort of, you know, sprayed and played and prayed coming back around, meaning you just hope those renewals are coming in and you hope people are happy, those days are long gone. They're about 10 years gone, seriously. So if you play, and Jed, you know my passion for this. I mean, if you're placing ads and you don't know the web stats, if you don't know the phone number, you know, the phone number of phone calls that are coming in, you are going to always, always be on your heels. And frankly, I can speak to this respectfully because I sold on my heels through the mid-'80s, and I sold on my heels into the 90s. And as I realized that there was a better way and better ways were coming about, hence here we are today. But again, I don't want to distract us from Jed's data and information. I just want all of you to know that what he's able to do with the very ads he's placing in your publications and in the clients of media bids, you're able to do for your direct advertisers. So kind of listen to this conversation sort of like playing the double word in Scrabble. There's two things going on here at the same time, okay?
And one thing, just to follow up on that quickly, I mean, one thing which hopefully is relevant is that you know, although many of the advertisers we're going to talk about today are sort of blatantly DR-type advertisers, you know, there's really been a shift out there, and even sort of stereotypically brand advertisers have become more and more conscious of response. And, you know, you can blame Google and you can blame other people, but the truth is that they are. So there doesn't appear to be as wide a gulf anymore between, you know, the kind of advertisers that Ernest is talking about and I'm talking about and maybe, you know, people that are, you know, blatantly brand advertisers. So would you agree with that, Ernest?
Absolutely, 100%. Yep.
All right. Let's talk about, you know, I've sort of broken out into different categories, some of the things that we see impact response more than anything. And one of the primary factors in response appears to be consistency. You know, as a salesperson, you know, you're sort of taught various numbers, you know, the magic number of ads that it takes to generate the appropriate amount of results. I mean, what number do you think it is, Ernest?
The appropriate number of impressions, I always revert back to like 5 and 7, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. It, you know, sometimes it's 13. I guess it depends on the contract that you're trying to sell.
Right, but, yeah, that's right. Yeah, good point.
But what we find is that 5 really is sort of the magic number. It's sort of an interesting thing happens after 5 insertions. So on average, between the first insertion and the second insertion, there's a 57% increase in response. And this is across all types of publications. From the second insertion to the third insertion, there's typically a 35% increase. And then from the third to fourth, and then the fourth to fifth, it typically goes up by about 10% each time. After the fifth, the interesting thing is that response rarely fluctuates. It doesn't go up much, but the interesting thing is it doesn't go down much either. You would think that after a certain number of insertions, the number of people who were interested in a particular product in a set geographic area would be diminished. You know, the way that I've always thought about it was if 20% of the people are interested in DirecTV, for example, you know, that 20% may change a little bit, but those are sort of satellite TV people. So in a circulation area of let's say 10,000, you know, then you'd assume that there'd be 2,000 people who'd be interested. But what appears to happen is that, you know, the true sort of pool of people is much more along the lines of anyone who watches TV as opposed to people who are specifically interested in satellite. So what we've seen is that, you know, this becomes a sort of a critical point for us because it makes it easier to predict future response because you do see response tend to sort of plateau, but also really not decrease, which to us was a sort of a major revelation.
So, Jed, this is Ernest, just so I could capture or capsule what you're saying. So what you're saying is that there's a sort of a burst between the first and second, and the second, third, and third, and fourth, and then it kind of levels out the response rate?
Right.
Yeah.
It levels out and rarely decreases.
Okay.
You know, idea that, you know, the typical objection that a lot of people hear from an advertiser who's been, you know, advertising in their publication for an extended period of time might be, you know, it's not working as well for me. You know, I've been running with you for 6 months, and, you know, in the beginning it was good. And we've found absolutely no data to support the idea that response decreases markedly.
Let me see if I can again just sort of draw this out. So are you saying, let's just, you know, pretend I'm a flower shop, and I get 10 phone calls, you know, in the first month. And then if it increases by 57, that might grow by another 5 or 6. And then another, it might grow another, let's pretend to, you know, 20 or 25. And then it will continue to function right in that sort of 20 to 25 range. Is that what you're saying?
Right. And nothing, and short of changing.
I love that.
But short of changing the offer, which we'll get to, the offer becomes a sort of a critical thing. Assuming that the offer is just sort of relevant and good, you know, in the consumer's mind, the number of calls will really not decrease below sort of a margin of error of maybe, you know, 5 or 10%.
Yeah,
so you might have a bad week where it's 15, you might have a good week where it's 25, but you can bet that the week after 25 it's going to come down to, you know, 22, right? It's unlikely to be, to sort of have a second spurt of real growth, but the interesting thing is that it doesn't decrease. That the pool of people who are interested in products appears to be large enough, even in small circulation scenarios. That's kind of a critical point to us, and that's really sort of the issue which drives response, perhaps more so than virtually anything. It's both good and bad. I mean, it's good in the sense that, you know, it becomes predictable, and the results and the results are good. If the results are at a level you want them to be, then, you know, it's worth continuing. It also is a surefire indicator that there's a problem, right? If your advertiser is not at the response level they need to be after even two or three insertions, right? That some change needs to be made, right? And what we find the most relevant, you know, sort of next indicator to be, and you know, this is going to seem a little obvious, but the offer that's in the ad. I mean, one of the things which appears to really be true is that people who respond to print ads are more educated about the offer, about the specific offer that they're responding to, than really any other medium. One of the ways that we know this is that the close rate for print is better than other mediums, with the possible exception in some cases of direct mail. But in most cases, the print outperforms other mediums, you know, dramatically. We don't have data on the response in other mediums from all of our advertisers, but based on the group that we do, which is about 10 or so, print has about a 40% better close rate than internet generated leads. It's about 30% better than radio, about 22% better than TV, and The only medium that really competes with it on a close rate scenario is direct mail.
Wow.
Which would make sense, right? Because
yep.
You know, direct mail is sort of the other medium in which people are have the opportunity to really sort of study the offer.
So just so I'm clear, what you're saying is this just validates the significance of the results of what print brings, right? I mean, that's what you're really describing.
Right, exactly. I mean, if people, if an advertiser is saying to you, I ran a radio ad and it generated 200 calls, the next thing out of your mouth should be, but how many customers, right? Because the truth is that other mediums are much better at driving high volume response, but almost universally the response that they're driving is less educated than, and I use the word educated not in the sense that the people calling are smarter than radio people calling, although we'd like
yeah.
to believe that.
I mean,
I mean educated and better looking, but it's
hey, no, speak yourself.
but I mean it in the sense that they're better educated about the product, right?
Right.
So,
okay.
For example, the people who are calling Dish Network know more about Dish Network when they're calling off of a print ad than if they're calling off of a radio or internet ad. One of the reasons why I bring up Dish Network was for those of you who study satellite TV offers, you know that the world sort of shifted off of its axis on June 1st when Dish Network decided to come out with a new offer which increased the price of the monthly fee by $5. So $5, right? $60 a year, right? How much, is sitting here, if I had to predict what that would have done to response, I would have said, 10%, 15%, somewhere in the neighborhood of that. I mean, the truth is that we saw about a 55% reduction in the total number of calls that were generated based on the ads that were running.
Based on $5. Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So you think to yourself on some level, right, like a Dish ad is a Dish ad. It's running in a publication with whatever, 100,000 circulation. There's a certain number of people who just hate their cable company enough to call Dish Network on any given day at any given moment. But the truth is that people are looking at the offer. Right, they're studying the offers, and they're making sure that, and they're not going to call a print ad if they feel they can get a better offer elsewhere. And this is an important fact, and something that, it seems really obvious, but probably, especially sort of in the early days of us doing this, we did not pay enough attention to, because if you're going against an ad in another medium with a different offer, even if you believe that offer to be equal to what you're doing, the truth is that if people aren't getting the same offer, they are less likely to respond. People seem to be very, very skeptical of of different offers in different mediums. So it's something that, we really sort of take great lengths to do now, is to try to make sure that our offers are aligned with what people are seeing other places. Because the perception among consumers is very often that one offer is going to be better than another. Another good example to this point is that, there's a flower company that did a test with us sort of as part of their response program, and what they did was they took into account they wanted to see what people would view as being more valuable, 20% off or $10. Now, you know, the average cost of a product is about $29.99. So you would assume, right, that they're relatively equal, but that more people would like the hard and fast sort of $10 off offer.
Right, understood.
Yeah. In an A to B test, in an A to B split where half of the circulation was going to one group of subscribers to a national magazine and the other half was going to this, you know, a subset of those subscribers. So, you know, if there were 10 people on a street getting a magazine, 5 would get one version and 5 would get another. The 20% off offer outperformed the $10 offer about 2-1, right? So something as simple as that can skew response enormously. Something that, you know, that I, as someone who, you know, reads a lot of ads, never would have guessed would have been such a determining factor in the amount of response that was received. But for consumers looking at those ads, there was something much more enticing about receiving 20% off versus receiving $10. Same exact ad. Every other word in the ad was the same. However, it made a huge difference. So that's why I bring up the offers, because I think that you know, if you're dealing with advertisers who want to who are expecting results, then it's fair to assume that they provide an offer which an educated consumer would respond to.
So let's just pause while we're sort of navigating through this first point. Is there anything else that you want to discuss related to ad size or ad color or frequency or positioning before we go into point number two here?
Sure. I mean, this is like the most fun stuff to talk about.
Okay.
It hurts a little bit, but we have found that placement and color rank far below consistency and relevancy. The biggest factor in determining response and in getting good response is having a sense of what it is your readers are looking for. And this is something that that I think sometimes in the rush to generate as much revenue for your publication as you possibly can and sell to, you know, the biggest, best advertisers that I think sometimes publications forget. And that is that, if you're able to sort of put yourself in the shoes of your readers and figure out what it is that they're looking for, then it is much more likely to be successful for everybody. I have some examples that I think are interesting. The classic example, and I think I've even used it before on one of these calls, but it still sort of cracks me up, is the example of Popular Science. Popular Science publication that, you know, we work with a lot. And I try not to use too many publication names because I don't want
sure,
the competitors to. But,
yeah, no,
but for
sure.
Those guys, I'm not too worried. But for Popular Science, they ran a series of ads and things that you'd sort of expect, right? That would be popular with people who read that, with typically an older male audience. Things like, you know, Dish Network and DirecTV and, flowers around around Valentine's Day or Mother's Day. And they did okay, but certainly not kind of what you'd expect for a national publication like that. The publisher of Popular Science was sort of looking through our ads, and he said, you know, I'm like a gadget guy, right? I love gadgets, and that's why I like Popular Science. What I like best about our magazine is the fact that we've got, you know, sort of the newest whiz-bang stuff that, you know, you can get for your garage and your kitchen and, you know, your computer, right? And the thing I think that's really cool is this self-disposing cat litter box, right? Just an absolutely sort of absurd product, right? It's, you know, Cat Genie, it's called. And you know, and they, you know, and who would think, right, that the average reader of Popular Science would be interested in Cat Genie? I mean, you know, stereotypically speaking, you know, more females than males own cats, right? You know, Popular Science is, you know, something like, you know, 85-88% male. But Cat Genie had, you know, they ran Cat Genie and got absolutely phenomenal results. I mean, it generated more than 1,500 phone calls from one, you know, eighth of a page ad.
Yeah,
because
wow.
The guy, I mean, partially by luck, but it's just a good example of sort of putting yourself in your reader's shoes, right, and saying to yourself, you know, this is what my reader, this is the type of thing my readers are going to be most likely to be interested in. And it just so happened, you know, he was interested in it, but it was, but you know, but it's a good sort of lesson. You know, other sort of examples along those lines are, you know, we break out the amount of thousands of circulation that it typically takes for a publication to generate one response, okay, to generate a phone call. And this is a little bit of sort of, you know, kind of response averaging on our part. So it's, you know, it varies pretty widely. But to use an example, you know, ADT, which is a home security system, you know, they have a circulation to response ratio of about 9,800. So it takes about 9,800 copies of a newspaper or magazine to generate one phone call. However, when that same ad is in a newspaper or magazine that is focused on homeowners, new homeowners, that response rate drops more than half.
Wow.
So it goes down to actually a little more than half. It's about 3,800. So you could see that the relevancy of that for new homeowners as opposed to existing homeowners is just that much more important. I mean, it's a little bit of an easy example because, you know, new homeowners are more likely to be interested in alarm systems, but I think that, you know, it's a good example of just the enormous difference that the relevancy can make. The other issue which impacts relevancy is editorial content, because, you know, there's sort of two prongs of relevancy. There's readership relevancy and then there's editorial content relevancy. The readership relevancy is a little bit easier to sort of you know, pin a tail on because it's pretty static, right? You know, your readers, the demographics of your readers don't change that much issue to issue. However, you know, your editorial content does change, and, you know, and it appears from the numbers we see that the editorial content makes a big difference when it comes to attracting the subset of readers within your readership that are the most relevant and are the most likely to call. You know, again, to use ADT as an example, you know, a horse magazine that ran ADT and had as their cover sort of protecting your barn and stable area from fire and burglary, apparently breaking into horse barns and stealing horse-related drugs is a big issue. But so I learned. But protecting your barn was sort of their cover story, and they ran ADT. Now their response per thousand was phenomenal. It was, you know, it was less than 1,000. So for every 1,000 they printed, you know, they received at least one phone call.
I see.
I mean, it's a point which, in the world of of response-based advertising is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right, very good. So let's shift gears if we could, because I know we want to talk on point number two about the tracking. What are the most important tools that can be used to track advertising response, and what matrices are being used to determine advertising success? Could we talk a little bit about that with the group?
Sure. Print has as its print has the disadvantage, the sort of one built-in disadvantage print has is there's no fast and easy built-in response mechanism the way that there is for the internet, right? I mean, what advertisers love about Google is that they can sign up for Google and they can see the response that they've generated for the prior day just by logging onto a website, right? Unfortunately, there's nothing that is sort of prepackaged and as easy for advertisers to access for print as there is online. But that doesn't mean that you can't do it, right? I mean, that sort of falls in the lap of publications, and sort of being the ones who provide that information is incredibly valuable. The two primary ways that we use to track ads, and there are many, are 800 numbers and unique URLs. 800 numbers are perhaps the easiest. We've talked about 800 numbers before on prior calls, but for those of you who are new to this, 800 numbers are nothing more than a transparent pass-through. They're a way of connecting a caller to a real phone number, to a phone number that exists at your advertiser's place of business. But what they allow you to do is they allow you to track the information about the call, right? They allow you to gather information such as who's calling, when they're calling, how long they spend on the phone, where they're calling from. Those are the primary pieces of data that you can capture on every single call. And just those pieces of information alone are very, very valuable because they allow you to quantify the ad that is running. They allow you to show your advertiser exactly the responses that the ad has generated, and therefore sort of legitimize the worth of the advertisement that they've purchased. Unique URLs are a little bit trickier. And to be honest, a little bit less successful than phone numbers when it comes to print. There seems to be more of a barrier to jump from a printed ad to a URL than there is from a printed ad to a phone. I think for a lot of print readers, picking up the phone is still a more natural way of responding. However, unique URLs do work, and they work. It's especially if you have a customer who's hell bent on sending someone to a website, it's better than nothing at all, right? And what a unique URL does is something very, very similar to an 800 number. It provides a transparent pass through, and it's usually through a page that no one can see, and it provides traffic information on who's actually going there, and it the information similar to a phone number that's provided is through the IP address of the person who's typing it in, which typically doesn't include the same kind of information as an 800 number. Or as extensive information as an 800 number, but it does include, where the person is located, and so it gives you a sense of just what the overall traffic that's being generated really is. What you need to be able to sort of take it a step further and find out what happens to that traffic is software that's installed on your advertiser's site, which can be a difficult thing to sort of convince your advertiser to do. But at a minimum, using a unique URL allows you to at least monitor that initial traffic.
Okay, so we've got the ability to monitor by the phone and also by the website. So tell us a little bit about how we tie this into advertising success and also the kind of information we want to be collecting here.
Well, I mean, it's you know, again, I mean, our premise in dealing with a lot of our advertisers is that response trumps all else, and that more and more advertisers today, even if they're advertising products which have typically been sort of, you know, the type of product which is branded, have been spoiled by the fact that, you know, they expect to receive tangible results from their advertising dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And what these tracking methods allow publications to do is to sort of compete with many of the mediums where these types of tracking methods, you know, are routinely used.
For example, what would be one of those mediums?
Well, I mean, for example, you know, we talked about Google earlier. I mean, they're sort of the clearest example, right? I mean, if someone is spending, you know, people get all excited by the fact that they're only spending $5 per click, right? Until they start to figure out, you know, how many sales they're making from their clicks, you know. Another medium that routinely uses this type of stuff is radio. Because it's all phone, they can use 800 numbers. They typically will put an 800 number on top of their customers and track the results for exactly the reasons we talked about here. What you want to be able to do, though, is you want to be able to say, you know, the dollars you're spending with us, the dollars you're spending in print are, you know, are going further than they are in the other mediums. And here's how I know, right? I know because you told me that, you know, your close rate in radio was 50%. You know, my close rate for the last ad you ran was better than that. I think that there's a little bit of a fear in some cases by print publications to really track the results of the ads that they're running, because they really have little experience with it. They sort of fear the worst. Whereas, you know, what we've found is that in many, many cases, you know, the results that are being generated are, you know, are nothing to be afraid of and can really help drive sales.
Yep. And further, this is Ernest, further to that point, you know, this whole piece about the tracking of results is an absolute win. It's where you want to absolutely be. And if you want to know why Google is doing so well and why it's the darling and why it's driving billions of dollars in revenues, everything they do is trackable. Every ad is being tracked by the web clicks, by the activity, and depending on the ad size and the campaign, it's also being tracked on the phone side. So, you know, if you want to know what, you know, is happening out there in the big picture, you pause and say, wow, if they're doing that and are having immense success, you're hearing Jed talk about it today with the immense success that they're seeing and observing, why would you not want that same trackability and that same component? And then when you think about your actual, you know, local or regional or national or sector or industry competitor, you pause and say, that's a huge competitive advantage for me. Huge competitive advantage, and that's the only way that I want to play if I'm going to be working with these advertisers, right?
Right. I mean, and just to add to that, I mean, it's sort of irrelevant whether publications think it's important anymore, right? Because the bottom line is advertisers do, you know, and they're the ones who are ultimately deciding. And I think that, you know, the success of Yahoo and Google, you know, has shown that, you know, that response drives results and drives advertiser, advertiser dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's you can't really get around it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's other ways to track, and it's going to be interesting to see how sort of these 2D barcodes develop. You know, that's something which really could be a boon to print response mechanisms. You know, and for those of you who don't know, I mean, essentially those are barcodes. They look similar to the kind of barcodes you'd see on grocery store products. The difference is that you use your cell phone. Right now, it's a little bit sloppy. You can download a piece of software, and there's a couple companies out there that do it that turn your cell phone camera into a barcode reader. You then take a picture of the barcode as it appears in a print ad, and it will take you to a website. So if you're using a smartphone, the website will appear right on your phone. If you're not using a smartphone, in some cases they'll ask you for some sort of piece of contact information so they can follow up and, you know, and provide you with information on the product. You know, sometimes they try to sell a coupon through it or try to give you a coupon through it. You know, in other cases it's just sort of, you know, information about the product itself. And that's something which could really change the landscape of response in print advertising because it is kind of a nifty way of interacting with a print ad. The problem with it now, however, based on our testing of it, is just that so few consumers know what the heck that code is that I think very few people are. Most people are reluctant to use it, to try it, because they either don't have the software on their cell phone, or they just don't know why the heck that code is appearing in an ad.
All right, so let's pause right here. Jed, I'm going to roll through about half dozen questions here and sort of banter them back and forth, because we've got almost 7 pages of questions, and I'm just going to work and weave some of them in. Jessica says, has print changed since the decline in the economy? The answer is it's changed in that there are fewer competitors, which means in given sectors there's less to compete against, which means for the strong they're getting stronger and the weak are truly going away. Connie asks, is it reliable to determine print response rate? Absolutely. You're listening to it today, whether it's by measuring by the website or measuring by the phone or both. Ideally, you can get a cost per lead. You can have all kinds of conversion ratios that convert into the actual sale component. Connie, you positively can do that.
You know, and one thing to just add to Connie's, so what your response to Connie's question is, I mean, you know, I mean, we didn't really say it, but it's, I mean, I hope it's kind of understood. I mean, one of the things that you get from tracking one advertiser, you know, is the ability to, you know, to solicit other advertisers, right? I mean, if advertisers knew that, you know, that one of your advertisers was generating, you know, 50 calls an issue, you know, they probably would be more likely to advertise. You know, it validates all the other things that you say about your publication.
Absolutely. Let's continue. Hillary poses a question. What strategic replies can you offer to the "we don't do print advertising anymore"? There's a piece, Hillary, in your presentation, the way that you're presenting the value of your publication and your USP, your unique sales proposition, that really needs to handle that. There is all kinds of research about the importance of print plus electronics and why it's so valuable. And furthermore, when you have trackable data and they say, gee, you know, we're a flower shop or we're an automotive dealership, you know, we don't use this or here's our approach. And you say, well, that's interesting. Here are the stats that we're able to see in your sector that we're actually generating. You need an approach, Hillary, in these economic times that is what I call disruptive selling. You have to stop a prospect in their tracks from whatever the objection is and have them pause and go, wow, I didn't realize that, or gee, I didn't know that. And when you're able to do that, then the selling and the sales presentation can begin. So the whole part about we don't do print anymore reminds me of the old days of Jed, when it was, you're not in the budget.
Right.
Or actually, business is so good. I used to love this one. Business is so good, we don't need to advertise.
Right. So I'm helping one of that.
Well,
let me just take a crack at this, because I mean, one of the things I didn't mention earlier is that most of our customers that we do response-based advertising for have never done print on a large scale before. And one of the reasons why we get them is sort of dealing with exactly the same question that's posed here, and that is, I'm not, we don't use print. And one way to approach that is to sort of say, but you do take new customers, right? I mean, you're still looking for, you're still looking for people to call or to walk in, right? I mean, that's what you do. And then, invariably the answer to that is yes. And then once you can sort of understand the economics of the business a little bit, then it becomes feasible to try to show them how print can generate the same or better results.
Absolutely. Let me continue rolling through here. Ricky asks, does the customer or the print publication provide the tracking number you would from the publication perspective? Okay, and if you'd like to learn more about that, ping me a note and I'll share some more resources with you and for you on that. So, Ricky, that would be great. Let me go to another question. We've got one from David who says, is it best to combine print and online ads or do them separately? 100%. They are intended to be combined. In fact, David, it's really a three-pronged approach. Your print ad, an e-newsletter that's going out to the readers, that includes advertisers, and your online ads. Okay, you want all three. It's a three-legged bar stool, and if you're only doing print and not web or newsletter, you're missing two of those stool legs. And if you're only doing web and print, you are massively missing the e-newsletter component. It is, in essence, the glue. You have to do all three. For those of you that are doing all three, high five, get out of here. You're golden, okay? If you're not, you're going to struggle as a print publication. Absolutely, positively. Jed, let me weave in a couple more here. Let's see. Dan says, how are free print publications position themselves to electronic threats? Dan, same point as we just shared related to David. You have to be weaving it back and forth together. My challenge question to you is, are you monetizing your website and are you monetizing an e-newsletter that goes out to the readers of your print publication and also coming to your website? So when you talk about electronic threats, it's a threat if you only have just your website and your print publication working. And if they're not working in conjunction, positively from that perspective. Jed, do you want to add additional comment to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of ties into a lot of the things we just spoke about. I mean, I think that, without gathering the data, you can't compete. If you do gather the data, I think you stand a good chance of showing your advertisers that the results that you're generating are very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sharman pinged a note about overcome the objection that in the real estate sector that people use the internet and that print is dead. Sharma, I know your publication and your parent company, there is a wealth of information related to that not being the case, but you need that information as part of your selling strategies, okay? So Jed, let's pause because we have, about 3 or 4 minutes here before the top of the hour. For those of you who know, we'll sort of pause the formal portion of our program, and then we'll open up our lines and more informally field some questions, and we'll generally hang out for 5 or 10 minutes, as much as you would like. So Jed, what else, just as you take a quick look across any additional key points you want to make, and then we'll take a pause and we'll talk to the group about how we'll open up the call here, okay?
Okay. When you get immersed in this stuff, right, you sort of feel like you could talk about it for days. But I really believe that print's future is much, much stronger than people give it credit for. And I think that if print can adopt, if publications can adopt more of these types of response mechanisms and gather the data and share the data with their advertisers and show their advertisers that the ads are producing, I think they'll be successful and I think they'll continue to grow. I think that the idea that someone buys ad space and hopes that it gets response and And, you know, you walk in there, you know, a couple days before your next issue and try to get the advertiser to buy again based on absolutely no data is something that, you know, as Google and Yahoo become more and more locally entrenched and more of an advertising venue for exactly the kind of advertisers that you compete, you know, that you're trying to gain, you know, it becomes, you know, that type of, you know, sales approach becomes more and more difficult to be successful.
Okay. And we got three reoccurring questions from Susan and Joe and Johanna asking about the benefits of Facebook and Twitter and so forth. We've done entire calls about social media. They're up at the MediaBid site. We've done entire calls about website SEO for publications with myself, Ryan, and also Jed. You can listen to those that directly related to the search engine side of the house. You know, that's one part. The community building side of the house, that's the other part. So be very clear on what your goals are, okay? Otherwise, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of that will feel like a bunny trail unless you're clear on your goals. For example, if you're selling B2B, we do all kinds of expert training on LinkedIn. And if you're selling B2B, you have to be there. And then you want to find the groups that relate to where your clients or prospects are. And then you want to jump in on discussions. Then you want to initiate discussions. And then you want to bring others over. And then in some cases, you want to form your own group. Okay? So there's a whole variety of strategies for these social media tools. It's sort of, Jed, like Kenny Rogers and the Gambler. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to walk away. Each of these strategies are complex, but simple if you understand what it is you're trying to do. If not, all of the social media and social networking will feel very confusing, and in the end you'll find yourself sort of just flailing in the wind and then stepping back saying, wow, we threw all kinds of money, time, people, and resources, and what did we get? Okay, so if ever you need any assistance or guidance on that, please let us know. We'll be more than happy to help you. Let's pause here. We're going to finish the formal portion of our call. And thank all of you for joining us. And then once you finish that, then we'll come back and talk to you a little bit about how to actually engage with us more informally, and we'll field some questions, okay? So, Jed, how about some closing words? I'll wrap it up, and then we'll pause this call.
Okay, great. I feel like I answered maybe a quarter of the questions that I intended to. so if you have questions, you know, please email us, and we will get back to you with responses. And but I want to thank Ernest. I really appreciate all of the expertise, and he knows more about this stuff and publishing in general than I ever will. So I appreciate his participation. You know, thank you all for joining us. You know, we look forward to these calls, and hopefully it was worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Beautiful. And thank you, Jed, for all the support from you and your team. It's been a pleasure working together over all of these years. As you can hear from Jed, he clearly gets and understands advertising and advertising results. MediaBid helps publications and publishers drive and add revenue to their business, and there's a real art and a science, okay? So listen to it from that side. The flip side, think about your own advertisers and what do you know about the art and science of measuring and tracking results. It's all there for you. It's been there for more than a decade. You need the tools and resources that Jed is describing here today, and there's a very specific formula. When you have all of those pieces in place and publication, in advertising sales, you will be the leader in your category, and it will be the best and most fun job you've ever enjoyed. Okay? So, again, this is Ernest with Power Hour and Jed with MediaBids. We're going to pause the call here, and then we'll talk about how to open this call up. Okay?